This episode of the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast is sponsored by Mozl. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Mozl is the only Apple unified platform for business. Mozl's integrated approach to management and security combines state-of-the-art Apple-specific security solutions for fully automated hardening and compliance, next-generation EDR, AI-powered Zero Trust, and exclusive privilege management with the most powerful and modern Apple MDM on the market. The result is a totally automated Apple unified platform currently trusted by over 45,000 organizations to make millions of Apple devices work ready with no effort and at an affordable cost. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, and protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a 30-day free trial and see firsthand why Mozl is more than an Apple MDM. Mozl is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozl.com. That's business.mozl.com. Thanks to Mozl for sponsoring the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast. This is 9to5 Mac Security Byte. I'm your host, as always, Aaron Wychulis, security writer here at 9to5 Mac. Recently, scammers have been using FaceTime as part of a wider scheme for impersonating bank employees, tech support, government officials, and there's even been cases for romantic partners. So to be clear, FaceTime itself isn't compromised. Malicious actors are just now using it to build trust with potential victims. Apple, along with the United States FTC and law enforcement, have issued warnings to users recently that legitimate organizations will not make unsolicited FaceTime calls, let alone ones that request passwords or financial statements and access to sensitive apps. Generally, this means older folks. As reported by the FBI's latest crime stats, 37% of financial crime in the US is elder fraud. That comes out to be somewhere around a staggering $7 billion in losses every year. That said, young adults aren't safe either. Those between the ages of 20 and 29 are actually twice as likely to fall victim to these types of attacks than seniors, according to that same FBI report. So, to better talk about all this, we have an expert in the space joining us on today's episode. Today, I'm joined by Clayton Leah-Brott, and he's a senior executive advisor at Truecaller, a company that specializes in better protecting users from spam and, by proxy, scams as a whole. Clayton is in the room now. Clayton, thank you so much for joining Security Byte. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. This is a concerning development.
So is it safe to assume that, say I'm a victim and I get a FaceTime call, how much detailed research on me have threat actors already done by the time that I've gotten the call?
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to assume that you have been profiled before that happening, right? And I think that, you know, in our business, we're seeing the weaponization of AI that makes that research even more complete and fast and scalable. And so we use AI to fight AI. But you can assume that they already have some sort of context about the victim.
Mm-hmm. Can you walk me through the process of how exactly they pick and identify who's a victim here?
Well, so I think that, remember, these guys are, first of all, they're very capable telecommunications and software engineers for the most part. They're also very astute psychologists and social engineers. And so, you know, whether they are scraping social profiles, right, they're observing people everywhere from LinkedIn to Facebook to Instagram to TikTok. And then, you know, the more breadcrumbs we leave behind, because we've traded privacy for the convenience and entertainment of social media, it's very easy to quickly build a profile about somebody to understand, you know, where they live, what are their life patterns, you know, with whom do they network, and find something that's relevant. I can find alumni of a certain school or former employees of a company or people who have special interests.
That's interesting. So I suppose it's not just threat actors going after one person just to go after that person. It's more of, how much data has this person shared? Is it enough where we can build a strong profile? So like they're sort of collecting all the low-hanging fruit. So whoever has shared all this stuff just makes them potentially a more juicy target, if you would.
Yes, exactly. So you know, the days of robocalls and mass calls are giving way, because there's countermeasures to that, are giving way to much more surgically targeted campaigns where I can build a profile. And as soon as I connect with you, whether it's via FaceTime or on a phone call or text message, I sound relevant to you. The information I already have about you makes it sound like, oh, I'm a figure of authority or a familiarity in your life. And so that makes it very tempting to engage with them because what they're saying does ring true.
Ah, I see. Okay. Let's go through exactly how this scam works from the beginning to the end. How exactly do threat actors initiate with this potential victim? I'm assuming they don't just collect all this data and then FaceTime them out of the blue, right? Is there like an email or a spam text? Is there some sort of communication beforehand before the initial FaceTime call is made?
Really, there's two ways, right? Again, if people are sharing their phone number on social media as part of their profile, and many people do, where they mention their phone number, then that is the identifier, right? And this is what's the irony is with the FaceTime fraud, because most of that is done through iMessage. And so most of your FaceTime calls are going to be in your contact list, but you can make a FaceTime call phone number to phone number. And that's where companies like Truecaller identify the phone numbers and, you know, either identify them or block them because they're malicious. So it may start with an inbound FaceTime call. It will more likely start with an inbound text message or email to click on a link, right? To begin to establish rapport. And ironically, what the fraudsters are doing is saying, look, we want to make sure that this is very legitimate for you. So let's get on a FaceTime call. And that way you can see me and I can prove that I'm Apple tech support or a financial services institution or something like that, which is quite the opposite is true.
When they're FaceTiming, are they using their real likeness and like identity? Are they somehow using AI to mask themselves and make them look like someone that they're not?
No, they can mask themselves using AI tools, right? They can grab phone numbers that will allow them to do this. I think the concern with AI too is that you can create a hyperlink or a toxic link to send in a text message, and it can be branded exactly like a bank or an insurance company or Apple support. It's very, very easy to establish counterfeit, landing pages. And it's very easy with AI now to script the perfect scam, where it used to be, well, if somebody calls me and they have an Eastern European accent or an East Asian accent, maybe I shouldn't take that call. Now, or it's broken English. Let's say it's broken English on the Nigerian print scam, or it's broken English on a text. Those days are gone. Now you get a perfectly legitimate, scripted read.
Yes. Yeah. I 100% agree. And that's what's just so crazy about AI. You know, I remember a couple years back now, it's felt like forever since ChatGPT first started. But I remember a couple headlines from back in 2021, 22, that AI was going to make email spam. You wouldn't be able to discern spam from normal emails because spam wouldn't have the identifiers of what spam looked like back then. You know, typos and broken English, et cetera, et cetera. So it is really interesting to see how AI is evolving.
Yeah. So our job at Truecaller is to fight AI with AI and detect those deep fakes as best we can, but it's a cat and mouse game. So we can detect toxic links, right? We're constant. It's a dynamic database. We detect toxic links in messages. We're always dispositioning phone numbers with, you know, either identities or this is very suspicious. Do not interact with this phone number. But people still get away with it.
So you mentioned a bit about landing pages. How often do you see a spoofed number that comes up, you know, Chase Bank number comes up as Chase Bank on your phone? How often are you seeing that today? And is it that being used in these FaceTime scams?
No, less and less frequently. I would say that we had a number spoofing problem until the last few years, where the FCC and the carriers have deployed a technology called Stir Shaken. I don't know if you've talked about that on your, but what they're doing, what it is basically it's a handshake between carriers, right? So a Verizon caller calls an AT&T caller. The carriers are sending in the signaling path, a token basically that says this is a legitimate point-to-point call, and that has reduced the number spoofing. The challenge is that it's not perfect because it has to be a pure IP path for that to happen. If at any point along the way traversing the U.S. telecom network, it goes to analog or TDM, then that's stripped out. So it's still possible, but less possible than it used to be.
So we know that these attacks now initiate by text or email via something like a link to a website that's impersonating something like a Chase Bank. I don't know why I'm so fixated on Chase Bank, but you know, the banking and financial area is interesting to me. It feels like a pretty wide threat landscape there. But so then once they receive the link and they put in some more information, you know, they might be a little skeptical. So then they'll request the FaceTime call, and that FaceTime call is then something that would validate the scammer on the other end and prove to the victim that they are who they say they are, which we know that they're not. What are the red flags basically that someone should look out for? You know, I know this is very niche. Most people aren't going to fall for this, but people are falling for it. So what exactly should a user know about this particular attack?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, right? As you mentioned, nobody for FaceTime, if they're not in your phone book, you shouldn't pick up, right? If it's an unidentified call coming into FaceTime, that is not the channel that commercial entities use to communicate with their customers, at least certainly not now. But even as you said, there's dating app scams, there's other personal scams that happen. So the users should download Truecaller or a similar app. There are others that work with iOS to identify or block those numbers. I think that's really important. If you believe you've been defrauded, you should report it to the FTC and the FTC. There are portals on both of those sites. If you believe you've lost money, you should actually contact your attorney general and probably your local sheriff or police office. Just cover all the bases there. And go ahead. Yeah, I mean, I think that before you go to the FBI, you know, definitely you'll get guidance when you fill in one of the portals at the FTC or the FCC, right? And then, but the state's attorney general are taking this very, very seriously in terms of enforcement, and so there's a number of ways that you can do that. If you're in our app, you can report it to us, right? And we can help with that.
Clayton, I just have to know, how widespread is this FaceTime problem really? Because to me it feels very niche.
Not really widespread right now. I think our point in this is that let's get in front of it, because as soon as, you know, what we see is when we start seeing people using, you know, so FaceTime and WhatsApp in particular, right? Because those are both attached to phone numbers, your identity. It's not, you know, like, it's not like your Facebook ID for iMessage, and it's not like some other mediums. But, you know, when we start to see fraud happening on FaceTime and certainly on WhatsApp, we want to get in front of the public, right, and to protect the citizenry against this. So I wouldn't say that this is widespread right now, but it is happening, you know, and at Truecaller, we take any of these threat vectors very seriously and make sure that we create awareness and we create countermeasures.
So there's been a lot of cases, Clayton, where putting pressure on Apple has resulted in some good outcomes for users. The immediate example that comes to mind is advanced stolen data protection that came about after the Wall Street Journal's Joanna Stern reported how people in bars were looking over other people's shoulders, memorizing their code to get into their phone. Then they would steal the phone and then start going into banking apps and removing Face ID, removing Face ID, then going into making apps and other sensitive apps and stuff, and basically have full control over the phone. So it's not a super widespread problem. Arguably it stolen data protection was worse. Do you think that we should be putting pressure on Apple to introduce some sort of alert or something of that nature?
I don't know exactly what I would prescribe for them to do. I know that at Truecaller, we've had good luck with Apple. You know, we were part of them launching kind of their live caller ID lookup feature, right? Because before that, we were just using the CallKit feature on the iPhone. That extended to, so now we have our entire global database of billions of numbers, right? That you know, we've got 500 million users, right? So we've got, and that allows us to access it. So they do listen over time. And I don't think that they're trying to shirk responsibility. I do think that we're very early on in this. Hopefully it doesn't become a trend. But I've been surprised. I've been unpleasantly surprised before by the success that these fraudsters, they're criminals, right? These are criminal enterprises. They're scam campaigns, and they're not going to give up.
It's kind of crazy because, like, in the past, a video call would be something that was like confirmation that you are a real person and or who you say you are. And it's just feels so brazen now that a threat actor would get on a video call, you know, either masked by AI and lie about who they are. It just I don't know. There's something about it that just kind of like is more eerie and just is heading in an interesting direction here. Mm-hmm.
Well, and they've changed so much that people are more open to, well, maybe that's how my bank wants to communicate to me now. So, you know, I think about my own parents, and then I think about my children, right? And the vulnerable populations you talked about. And I could very well see my parents saying, well, maybe that's the way that these entities want to communicate with me now. I might as well engage. And remember that these are people who still answer their phone no matter what. Right, they come from a generation where you answered the phone, and so that is a very vulnerable population. That's why Truecaller has a family plan where you can come in and protect your parents, protect yourself, protect your kids. And it is very brazen, right? It is very brazen because you and I are on video right now. You can't see it on a podcast. But imagine if I had a uniform on, or if I was, you know, professionally dressed with a background that said that I was part of a large bank, and I said, Aaron, we've seen some unusual activity in your account. Can you please give me your account information, right? So I may not directly take money from you on that call, but now I'm just building a profile on you for future identity theft, right? And so I might be able to come in very, very authoritatively, and that is when the damage happens.
So WWDC 26 back in June, Apple introduced a couple new features for messages and phone. For messages, we got a new filtering system that basically takes spam off of your main inbox and delegates it into its own category among some other filtering options that you can do in the Messages app. And then on the phone side, we got call screening, which now can review your phone calls and send you a transcript of what the person is saying, and you can decide whether to pick up or not. Do you think that these features will have an impact for iPhone users when iOS 27 releases to the public in the fall?
I think everything, you know, is incrementally beneficial, but it's only ever as good as the data is, right? So you need to have the data that is in dynamic data so you can identify the suspicious calls, the malevolent calls. You have to be able to. And the other thing is you don't want to overfilter, because what if you miss an important call? So somebody calls your grandparents and it's an unidentified number, or texts them and it goes into a spam filter and it was their pharmacy or it was their medical provider or something, right? So you get false positives. So I think that that's the difference between third-party applications like Truecaller. It's all we do. It's all we do is we update that data continuously with AI and ML. We get user-generated feedback, and that makes us very, very accurate for those purposes. And then we have our own AI assistant call screening features that offer more advanced interactions, right? So that if you're expecting professional calls in, or you want to make more, you know, customized interactions with AI, you can do that as well. But I think every little bit does help. But these guys are very clever. I mean, just remember how clever these guys are. So there is no silver bullet in the fight on scams.
Yeah, I completely agree. For listeners that might not know what Truecaller is, you mentioned it a lot in the episode. Would you just want to give like the Cliff Notes version on what exactly y'all do there?
Sure. So Truecaller is the largest mobile application dedicated to communications protection and fraud. So really caller ID and spam blocking, how we started, and then moving more into actually communications fraud. So 500 million global monthly active users. So a very significant global presence. And it's a very active community of users who are saying, no, that wasn't a telemarketing call, it was a scam call. You know, no, that wasn't a bank, that was a collection agency, right? And so that gives us this additional layer of user feedback and social proof on those numbers. It's and you know, you can download it from the App Store. It works on iOS. We're constantly developing and enhancing it. And I look at apps like Truecaller just like I do. You would not leave, Best Buy or the Apple Store without, with a new MacBook and not have McAfee or Norton on it. Very unlikely you would do that. Why would you leave with a new iPhone without having Truecaller or something similar on it, right? It's a belt and suspenders to protect you, because at any point, you know, even as savvy as we might be, you could fall victim to a scam. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I almost fell victim to a scam for a package. It was the holidays. I was getting a lot of packages, and I was interacting with somebody, and then they were asking me for all this information. I said, whoa, wait a minute, what am I doing? You know? And so if I can fall victim to that after been doing this for quite a decade and a half, at any moment in time, it's not only naive people that can fall for this, because these are incredibly sophisticated social engineers.
Clayton, you've had a very extensive career in this field and at Truecaller. Could you possibly share any interesting stories or just things that have happened that you would just like to share for the Security Byte listeners here?
I've seen some really extreme cases. For example, a widow was called by a group of criminals that said that her husband had helped her husband in tax evasion, and that they needed money from her to continue protecting his estate. Okay, and this woman ended up getting a bag of paper bag with $8,000 in it, and driving to a local gas station to drop the money off. Now, she was distraught. They knew all about, obviously starting with an obituary and then a little bit more information. And then just think about that, right? The 70-some-year-old woman driving to a gas station with a bag of money to protect her dead husband's name and the estate. That's pretty bizarre. And those type of things really do happen. Now, that's an extreme example. More commonplace are identity theft. Another one I'll give you is that I had employees, and I got a text message from my employees. They said, how soon do you need those Apple gift cards, boss? What? Right? What is that? So somebody that was pretending to be me was saying, I'm in a very important meeting in a customer or client boardroom, and I would like to give all of these people Apple gift cards. And so what they had done is they had gone and social engineered LinkedIn and said, okay, here's LinkedIn. You can use AI or ML very quickly now on these apps to say, okay, what does the org chart look like? Okay, now I say, hey, Aaron, your boss wants you to, send a MoneyGram to this customer right away before he leaves the site. And those are the types of things that you roll your eyes at them and say, how could somebody possibly fall for it? But, at a vulnerable moment, it could happen to any of us.
You know, I can imagine for a lot of younger people listening to this episode right now, they're probably thinking something along the lines of like, older people fall for scams. Like, that's never going to happen to me. I'm smarter. I've been around the internet more. I know more about this stuff. Older people might have, they didn't have internet growing up and, all this. They're probably rolling their eyes hearing about some FaceTime scam or whatever. But what would you say to young people who are of that thought?
This has been a surprise in the last few surveys that we had over here in the States, right? Is that young people get scammed almost as much as seniors. And the reason is they're naive. They believe too good to be true stories. So it could be student loan forgiveness. It could be a great job opportunity. We're going to hire you, Aaron, so that you can QC ChatGPT, and we're going to pay you $3,500 a week, right? And so all these types of things happen. And of course, there's the dating app scams and all of those things. So I think that with young people, and I have four children, okay? So I look at, and there's a belief that, well, we're really tech savvy. We know what's going on. You know, grandma and grandpa don't know because they're not familiar with, but we know all this technology. But they also are naive and uncertain about what's happening. And it's very easy to get them that too good to be true story. Could be a lover, could be, like I said, student loan forgiveness or a great job or a new credit card. And so they actually, I would say young people, and this is why the family plan extends to them. They need this just as much as anybody else. You know, they're a little bit confident, and that overconfidence is their enemy.
I can totally see that. Well, Clayton, we're running out of time here. Is there any one last anything you want to add to the conversation?
No, just that in general, Aaron, you know, in your field, I'm sure you're seeing this, you know, we're seeing the weaponization of AI. So there's all the wonderful things and wonderful productivity that can be enhanced with AI. But the bad guys are all over it, and they know how to use it as well or better than the good guys right now. And that's why, you know, companies like Truecaller dedicate a lot of cycles to fighting AI with AI. And we continue to evolve on that. And it's not unlike, you know, your cybersecurity reporting, where it is a cat and mouse game. It's never over.
That was Clayton Leah Broughton. He is the senior executive advisor at Truecaller. Clayton, thank you so much for joining us today. This was really great.
You bet. Thanks for having me. Hope to see you again.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Security Byte podcast, please give it a follow, subscribe, or add it to your library wherever you're listening to it. And give it a 5-star review or whatever you think it deserves. It helps other people discover the show. And if you want more Security Byte, check out my weekly column on 9to5Mac. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you guys in the next one.